out in there, whatever they want to do. But could you imagine sleeping inside the Unity node and knowing right above your head is the Z1 structure, because that's birthed to the Unity node, just like the Cygnus cargo vehicle is going to be birthed to the Nadir part of it. On the Zenith port, this Z1 structure is attached. And you try to sleep. I can't imagine thinking about these things. 600-pound spinning things, you know, at 6,600 RPM, you know, whizzing above your head on super-duper bearings, you know. And incredible. And constantly moving all the time. Now, let me drop it for a bit, and then you pick it up, and I'll give you an idea of how these things work. Back to you.
Yeah, what you're concerned about is a 600 pound locating at 6,600 RPM. The total amount of kinetic energy there is huge. If that flywheel decides to come apart, my goodness, can that poke a whole lot of holes in the side of the ISS? They must have a lot of faith in that containment vessel, LePaul. And now, you're about to tell me, what do these four objects do in order to change the orientation of the ISS? Over you, Paul, KQRIW.
Yeah, okay, and another good thing is you don't have to worry too much about the saturation points of these things, like you do with the reaction control system. Rather the other type standby. You don't have to worry about that with the momentum, you know, spinning them up and spinning them down. These things never have to spin up and spin. These things spin and that's it. And they never have to change direction. So what happens is, picture this spinning gyro thing. So first of all, they have a big, it's encapsulated. It is, you know, completely covered. But, you know, if you were to look at it, say you took the top cover off, if you were looking at it, and you want to take the spacecraft, you know, clockwise, counterclockwise, would have this gyro, you know, as it's spinning, you would put, tilt is a better word, you'd have to tilt this whole setup, either as it's spinning, you'd have to tilt it to the right, or tilt it to the left. Just tilt it either to the right or to the left. You don't have to speed the motor up, slow it down, do nothing. Just tilt it one way or the other way. Now, in this setup that it's sitting in, like, you know, this whole contraption that it's sitting in could actually rotate. You could have it, for instance, on a table with a, you know, with some kind of a pivot on the bottom. And so if you tilt this whole gyro to one side, this whole contraption will actually turn. If you tilt it to the right, it'll turn to the right. If you tilt it toward the left, it'll turn, tilt back to the left. And,
repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Where the axle is, and then, you know, not the spinning thing itself, but the thing that's holding the spinning thing. Because imagine attaching this, you know, those pieces, you know, heavy duty steel or whatever, and it's now attached to the truss section. And the truss sections are as long as a football field, and you're in the middle of it, and you're in the middle of this whole truss setup. Now, by tilting it one way, you're putting a strain, and this whole body of this thing will actually rotate to the right, and it'll turn the space station to the right, to the left. And then you have other ones, of course, you know, another one facing in another direction, and you can go up and down, and the other two are backups. Back to you, Dick. WS2N.
Is each one of these CMGs, 600-pound, rapidly rotating gyroscope wheel, is each one of those mounted into a gimbal assembly where you can change the orientation about the x-axis, the y-axis, or the z-axis? Is it mounted in a gimbal assembly, and then are there small motors or gears or actuators of some kind that can force the orientation of the gyroscope within that gimbal. Is that approximately the way it's mounted, Paul? K2RIW?
Yeah, but you can't see a close-up view of it, but you know that's the way it is. I mean, by the way, it's not an easy thing to find these pictures of this thing. And I did finally come up with one. And then another one has some kind of an exploded view type of diagram, which kind of is describing what you're talking about, a gimbal. Best way I could describe it, you know, I'll downsize this whole thing. You know, I don't know if you're sitting in a chair that swivels left and right, Dick, but say you're looking at a wall, put a map on a wall, you could put attached to the arm of your chair, you could put one of your green lasers and point it somewhere, and you move your feet, and you point at the map, and you point at Russia, and move it the other way, and then you point to the United States. You know, you can move it back and forth, worry about up and down later. Take this theory of what I'm talking about. Take a wheel and put it on the back of your chair. Now, you know, in line with you. In other words, if you had a wheelchair, take that same wheel, don't change the orientation of it, and move it, you know, slightly behind you. And hook that up to a gimbling type of setup where, you know, you've got two spokes and here's this wheel attached to you, and you're spinning this wheel, you physically spin it. And you can take this gimbling setup, that's a good word that you use. You know, it's from where you're holding the axle. Bring that forward and, you know, kind of like bump it into the chair where you could tilt that wheel. You could either tilt it, you know, left or tilt it right as it's spinning. And put a little handle on there, you know, attach a handle to this shaft that's going all the way back to the gimbling setup. If you take that handle and you push the handle to the left, the spinning wheel behind you will start to tilt to the left. Well, if you pull it to you, you know, to the middle of the chair, if you point in that direction, the whole thing will tilt the other way. Now, as you're doing that, because it's attached to the arm of the chair, if you pull it, let's say, towards you, this handle towards you, and it tilts, the spinning wheel tilts, your chair will actually start to turn right. Or you straighten it all the way up, go vertical. Now it's spinning, you know, the way it was, you know, vertically. Now you push it away from you. You tilt that wheel away. What'll happen is you know, to the left. You're pushing the handle away from you. Your chair will start to move left. That little green light on your chair you'll see that on a map. And you'll be able to point any way you want, exactly where you want. Great for the military. Back to you, Dick. WS2F.
Okay, you put the wheel on the back of the chair. Let me make believe that the wheel was not so heavy that I could put it into my lap. The whole wheel assembly that's spinning very rapidly, this gyroscope, I can put it into my lap while I'm sitting into this swivel chair. Would I stop it off with the axis of the gyroscope, the shaft it's turning on, would that shaft start off parallel to the ground, and would the shaft stretch from the left-hand arm toward the right-hand arm of the chair? Is that where the rotational shaft would be located if this wheel was sitting in my lap while I'm sitting in the swivel chair? Is that the possible starting position? Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
The axis of the wheel, I would say, would be parallel to the floor. Okay? Give you an idea. You pick up a bicycle wheel and, you know, hang on to the axle with one hand and the right hand to the other side. Now you're looking at the tire right in front of your nose. That's the position it starts out at. You don't move it. And that's the orientation it's going to stay. Now you just take this whole wheel, go up to the left of your chair, or to the right of your chair, whatever. You need to bump it down and then put it down on the floor. Put it like behind you a little bit, you know. but no, don't turn that axle. That axle's still parallel to the floor. The wheel is, you know, if the wheel is running and on the floor, it would push you forward just like a wheelchair in that direction, back in there.
Okay, that tells me the way the gyroscope is spinning. But now if I want to change my aiming of my chair, instead of the laser pointer pointing at Russia on the map on the wall, it's now going to point to the United States. If I had a way of grabbing the axle of this gyroscope, and now I move the axle, I keep it parallel to the floor, but I move it in such a way that the left-hand side of the axle is moving toward the tip of the arm of the chair, and the right-hand axle is moving toward the beginning of the arm of the chair, if you know what I mean. If I did that kind of apparent rotation of the axle of this gyroscope that's sitting in my lap, and the method that I just described, my chair, I'm trying to rotate top view, the axle axis, I'm trying to rotate that axis, it's staying parallel to the ground, but I'm trying to rotate that axle clockwise, because the gyroscope is resisting that reorientation, my chair will now swivel counterclockwise while I'm trying to rotate the shaft clockwise, and the shaft is staying parallel to the ground. So far, does that seem close? Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
Well, you're starting out with the shaft parallel to the ground. Now you're spinning the wheel. Now, by rotating the axle, by forcing the axle, so now the axle is no longer parallel to the ground. The left side of the axle now getting closer to the ground, and the right side of the axle is going now higher above the ground. You know, that's a left tilt. I bring it back, and now it's level again. Now it's the axle is now again parallel to the ground. You want to go right, let the axle that's closest to you go toward the ground, and that will, of course, raise the axle that's furthest away from you, away from the ground. And here's this thing that's spinning. That torque, the strain on that will actually transfer its strain to this gimbling mechanism that you actually is attached to your chair. It's kind of like, a simpler version would be take the same wheel, spin it in front of you, hold the whole thing in front of you, spin the wheel, and then just tilt the thing to the left or tilt the thing to the right. You'll see your chair move. Your chair will go left, just turn. You know, it will turn either left or will turn right. That I remember doing back in school. I remember talking about that a couple of weeks ago. Back to you.
In your description, Paul, you seem to start off with the opposite orientation. The shaft was parallel to the ground in the beginning. One end of the shaft was essentially touching my stomach. The other end of the shaft of rotation is directly away from me. And now what you said was that you're going to change the orientation of the shaft of rotation, where the portion of the shaft that's closest to me is going to be pushed down, closer to the earth, and the portion of the shaft that's furthest away from me is going to be tilted up further away from the earth. Is that the change of orientation of the gyroscope that's now going to cause me to rotate that chair? Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
That's right. I saw this chair demonstration on one of these YouTube things a while back, too, but it's that type of thing. Now I scaled it up, and you have the exact same type of thing on the International Space Station. I heard John in there. But yeah, that's what I was trying to describe there.
As I said earlier, a gyroscope always responds at right angles to the force that you apply. When I try to take the shaft that's closest to my stomach and push it down closer to the surface of the earth, and the portion of the shaft that's furthest away from me, I lift it up further away from the surface of the earth. As I try to make that shaft orientation, the gyroscope responds with a counter force at right angles. The net result is it's going to try to rotate my chair clockwise or counterclockwise, top view. So far, does that sound right, Paul? Over to you, K2LAW.
That's right. And the farther you move it, the quicker the chair moves, too. There's a relative change in that, too. If I move that real quick, it's a quick jerk. Your chair moves pretty quick. Incredible amount of force must be exerted. I mean, you know, the space station's a million pounds. I find it's flying through the air, through space, you know, supposedly without gravity, but microgravity. But, you know, that's a lot of mass to try to turn one way or the other. You know, they say when you do an EVA outside of the, you know, you climb out of the Quest module and you stop, you know, you're on the side of this thing, looking at the length of the, either the truss or all these modules. They say it's like, you know, standing on the 15th floor of a 30-floor building in the middle of a 30-floor building and climbing out the window and just like standing there and looking around and looking up and down. It's a big mess. Back to you, sir.
And even though the whole space station is a million pounds, it is in the most frictionless environment in the world. Even if you apply an extremely small force that tries to rotate the International Space Station, no matter how small that force is, you apply it long enough, you'll eventually change the orientation. So I presume now there's some kind of motors or actuators that are attached to that gimballing system where these gyroscopes are mounted. They apply the force that tries to reorient the axle of the gyroscope, and it does what you and I just described by pushing that shaft while we're sitting in this swiveling chair. That gimballing system must have motors or actuators on those gimbal bearing points. Is that true, Paul? Over to you, K2LIW.
Yeah, I know. It was 120-volt motors, too, believe it or not. And I forgot the horsepower. You know, I didn't think I was going to spend that much time on it. I'll have to research the amount of power it uses. But yeah, it's that type of deal. So if they ever start to slow down, I'll spin them up. They have them in the Mir, too. Mir space station. And the Russians were using magnetic bearing systems. Why not doing that? But the magnetic bearing system, and they did have some problems with it. Back to you, Dick.
Is that spinning mass inside of a container that is a vacuum? Because if there was air in there, it would be slowing down the wheel by the air drag. Is there a vacuum inside of that containment vessel where the CMG gyroscope is mounted? Paul, go ahead.
Well, yeah, and not only that, it's a vacuum on both sides of it too. On the, you know, inside this container, and on the outside, it's in the Z1 truss segment, which was primarily it was the first truss piece that was attached to the space station. Only used temporarily as a truss segment. They attached a P6 truss to it temporarily. While they were building the space station, eventually P6 was transferred all the way to the port side, which left the Z1 structure. But the Z1 had always had these gyros in it, some other equipment as well. And it's actually birthed to the Unity module. And, you know, you could actually open a door and climb into it. It's like a dome type of area where they can do wires and piping. Some mechanical equipment is in there. And they also use it for some storage. But above this dome section, you know, that's out of space, that's where these spinning things are. So, you know, it's, you know, you can't really see it from the outside, but that's where it's located. They're actually in a vacuum spinning. They're not actually physically inside the breathing part of the space station.
EMGs are so precise and effective at changing the orientation of the ISS, how come Hubble is not using them? Are these a later development that didn't exist when Hubble was designed up? Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, well, they improved on these things as time went on. They had saturation points with the CMGs originally. Apparently, they couldn't lose as much coverage as they wanted to, but they worked on it, and they figured out what they could do. They could, you know, they've got it to where they could maneuver the space stations anywhere they want without any problem. So, they thought about it for Hubble, and they didn't like the idea that these things would be spinning all the time. On the Hubble, you want everything super steady. And they don't want motors running, at certain times. So that's part of it. So that's why they don't have them. They thought about a lot of things early on, but, time went on. The Hubble was 1990. The ISS was 2000 or so when they started launching stuff up. I think the Z1 structure went up in 2001, 2002. But it's a big time difference. They came a long way. Back to you.
I'm going to turn over to Chairman in a minute. You said that the CMGs used to run into saturation. Can you define what saturation means? And what do they do to correct that saturation? Oh, you, Paul?
There's some kind of a problem where it couldn't go far enough. And they realized they could use the gravity of the Earth somehow to different parts of the Earth acted differently. And there's some kind of an effect on the space station to, they don't have it, but in the beginning they were worried about gimbal lock and things like that. And they realized with these units that, I guess over time, they perfected them. They didn't have any of these problems. I know, according to what I read when they were designing these things. Don't have enough information. Today we don't have a ham from Jersey. The company that did all this came out of Jersey. We should be within their range. I wish a guy from the company years ago would get on it and say, hey, I know exactly how this was done. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I hope if I Google the word CMG, I'm going to find something on this, or actually spell it out. John, I've looked up the word Dreyer, D-R-Y-E-R, as a last name, and there are 22 hams currently with that last name. None of them are in Pennsylvania. None of them have a first name of Bruce. Is there the possibility there's a different spelling on the name? If that was mailed to you, is there a mailing address? If I knew the address, there's ways I can look up the ham. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
It's hard to tell. Dave emailed me on the chat room, and he told me he looked it up about an hour ago, and he said there was no listing there. He chased it down, maybe a different spelling. Tried a few things, but the thing is too, he may not be a ham. Normally I think I would get a call sign, so I really don't know what's going on there. But I'll have to look into that. Maybe I can track it down in some way. A lot of times I get tools for names, fake names, because I don't know what maybe they feel they're embarrassed. I have no idea. But I will chase it down and see what happens.
Yeah, with a guy with an antenna that big on 40 meters, boy, he sure sounds like a ham. Many a ham, by the time they build a structure that big, I've run into this problem a lot with the guys on the microwave reflector. They assume and the guys that are doing moon baths, they assume everybody knows them. So they don't bother writing down their call letters. They just give you a first name, and they assume everybody, a guy named Bruce, who lives in Tucson, Arizona, who's got a 32-foot dish. He just calls himself Bruce. He assumes everybody knows who he is, if you know what I mean. I've run into a lot of that. You had a question for Paul, I think. Go ahead, John. KC2WGB, K2LIW, and the TechNet.
Well, all I was going to bring out, but I think Paul covered it eventually, I did those same experiments with the bicycle wheel on that rotating bar stool or piano stool, and I held it out in front of me, I held the axle, and if I tilted it to the right, you know, the stool would start to rotate and turn it to the left and back and forth, so yeah, that works very effectively, but Paul covered most of the angles.
Moving a bicycle wheel that way while you're on a bar stool or some other kind of rotating chair, the good news is that the bar stool gimbaled to the floor in such a way that you can change the azimuth of the chair, but the bearing going to the floor and the floor forces your elevation of your chair to never change. That's good. In free space, try doing that bicycle wheel experiment by rotating the wheel the way you described. Yes, your chair will move in azimuth, but eventually it's going to change in elevation at the same time. Because no matter what you try to do, when you try to change the orientation of the axle of a gyroscope, no matter how you push on that axle to change its orientation, it always responds at right angles. Well, if you're moving a very heavy mass, in other words, if you've got a very heavy person on this bar stool with a very good set of bearings, in order to rotate the bar stool 180 degrees, you might have to rotate that bicycle wheel orientation multiple times. On the bar stool, you can do that. In free space, on some of those orientations of that reorientation of the axle, your chair in free space is going to be changing in elevation. You see what I'm saying, Paul? So there's something more complicated that's got to go on here, so that if I want to steer the International Space Station only in azimuth, and if my gyroscopic system is going to simultaneously give me some elevation change, then I've got to do something else to compensate for that. Maybe that's why there's four wheels. Over to you, John. You see what I'm saying here?
Repeater, timeout.
You've got it, John.
KC2WGB. Well, I look at it this way. If you were to put the gyroscope in the center of the craft with the vertical, or let's say the top and bottom of the gyro in a way related to some direction in that craft. Let's just say it's vertical in the craft. Okay. Now we have a ring and pinion gear. Try to change that gyro, you're going to change in yaw or azimuth, and it may not affect pitch. So that's something to think of. Now, I believe Paul said they have three of these for the XYZ axis. They have to manipulate two of them when they're making a motion or something like that. But I know that as that pinion gear tries to turn that ring gear, that influence is going to be transmitted to the structure of the craft.
Now, they're all computer controlled, you know, but the article doesn't get involved in that, but you're assuming that they know that. It's all computer controlled.
Yeah, didn't you say there's four of these CMGs, Paul? One, two, three, four, over to you, Paul.
Yes, and, you know, naturally they give you the rundown on one and how the other ones are oriented, you know. I don't know, but I'm assuming one's probably, you know, at a 90 degree offset or something. And, you know, whatever it is, they've got it worked out, but they do have four. And whether or not one is a backup or not, in case one fails, I don't know. As far as, you know, you're never really going to have to rotate the whole station, you know, even 180 degrees, you know. It's kind of like flying like a plane. The one that's going around the Earth is kind of like an orbit, you know, it's always facing the same side as the Earth. So they just need little adjustments here and there, constant adjustments, which they're doing all the time. And by the way, your statement about the mass being affected, you know, by small forces, you'll see when they're jogging in there, that whole contraction that they're on is all on spring shock absorbers and stuff. The idea is not to translate energy to truss segments. They said if you typeset. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, with four of these CMG gyros, I'm going to guess that each one is located, the shaft is located parallel to the X, Y, and Z axis for three of them. I don't know where the fourth one is, but now once you've got three or more of these devices mounted to a gimballing system, calls it a rack and pinion or a ring and pinion, I'm going to call it a gimballing system, where you're able to change the orientation. And the motor you're talking about, the AC motor, Rapul, is that the motor that spins it up, or is that the motor that puts a force on it through the gimbal to change the orientation? I think there's got to be motors for both. And maybe the gimballing motor is really a set of gears, and the main motor that spins it up all is inside the vacuum. And I think you're saying we, in the United States, with the CMGs, we're not using a magnetic bearing. We're using a real roller bearing that's inside of that vacuum. Over to you for a couple of those questions, Paul. WS2N, K2LAW.
Yeah, NASA article I read had mirrors using the vacuum ones, and they didn't quite describe how ours were. Somebody's, when you get that detailed, you know, it goes beyond just a PDF file. It's almost like you have to put your NASA, employment code in there to go deeper. I can only get so far. I can't even get a picture. Maybe eventually, I guess I could eventually, but I've looked. I can't even get a picture of the four, how they're laid out in the Z1 structure. It's just verbally how they described it. And I do know it's a motor. The motor is the one that they were talking about that spun this thing up to 6,600 RPMs and keep it there. They didn't talk about the motors or hydraulics or whatever is moving these actuators back and forth. Don't know. Again, way too detailed. What I saw is a picture of a couple of guys standing around with the cover removed looking at one of these things. And you can get an idea of the size of it. The diameter is pretty big. I don't know. It looked like it had to be 4 feet in diameter. Back to you, Dick.
When you see the thing with the cover off and guys looking at it, and it's 4 feet in diameter, was that at the factory on the Earth where it's manufactured? I'm having trouble believing that they actually disassembled this thing on the ISS. Is that true, Paul? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, it's in the factory. It's probably in the Jersey plant. I heard a tone come out of this thing. But yeah, there were like, I don't know, three or four guys standing around this thing, and the cover on the top and cover on the bottom. I don't know, yeah. I'm not even sure what I was looking at, but you could tell. I'm not really sure. You need more detail. Just found the picture. I need more detail. You can see it's mounted between two axle-like things, and I'm not sure if the gyro is actually encapsulated inside this. Looks like it's probably inside this black frame. I don't know. We'll have to look for more details on you to find something.
You said the factory is in New Jersey. Do we know the name of the manufacturer of the CMG? Over to you, Paul.
Let me think. I guess it's probably on the next page. I got it here. Yeah, New Jersey. Got a phone number we could call. Space and Navigation 450 Clock Drive, Bud Lake, wherever Bud Lake is. Anybody know where Bud Lake is? New Jersey. Business development. Maybe it's one of those business development centers. I don't know. Apparently the name of the thing is probably L3. They have a website. I should go to their website. www.l-3.com/SpaceNav, but it's in Bud Lake, New Jersey.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of companies that are owned by L3. So I think it's a great big conglomerate now. So Space Nav, or Space Navigation apparently is the name of the company that manufactures this thing. That's a fun type device. I remember a project that I was on, 14 years ago, at Airborne Instruments Laboratory, where I was proposing the use of gyroscopes in order to create orientation of a spacecraft. And at the time, people told me, no, that wouldn't work. And I said, are you sure? What you're describing now sounds somewhat close to what I was proposing at the time. So, I may have invented a slight portion of this thing, but never got any credit for it, Paul. And you haven't seen what kind of actuators are used on the gimballing system for the axis of this gyroscope, which tries to change the orientation, just like you and I pushing on the axle of this bicycle wheel while we're sitting in a swivel chair. You haven't seen anything that shows you how you actuate the gimbal bearings, if you know what I mean. Over you, Paul, K2LAW.
About 2 minutes, Dick.
No, I haven't seen it. But it's, you know, my guess, if you rotate the camera away from these guys and probably on another table in his clean room, probably all his other parts are sitting right there, you know. But we'll have to do some searching. Yeah, I'm watching the time, John. I see that. Back to you. This is WS2N for the space portion. 178, I think I'm up to. Back to you, Dick.
178 is the number. You guys have just heard TechNet number 1585. 73, you all. We'll be back next week. John's going to tie the ribbons on it. KC2WGB. K2LIW. I hope we can find Mr. Diver eventually. You got it, John.
Yep, we're going to have to track him down. KC2WGB. As usual, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us on the net and the questions that were submitted. Always good, and we're having a lot of fun. Hope you can join us again next week. And everybody, just have fun and relax and enjoy the hobby. Kind to each other. Back to you, Dick. KC2WGB clear.
Yeah, who invented that statement, be kind to each other? But it does make sense. Yeah. Don't sweat it. You ain't going to get out of this one alive. You better enjoy the process. Bye-bye, you all.
I'm taking all of my possessions with me. Good night, Paul.
Have a good night, John. Dick. Everybody else, 73. Try it again next week.
He's going to take Cookie with him, and that I understand. Is Cookie going to go?
Well, I think they're laying odds on who's going to go first, me or the dog. So maybe we'll be together. I don't know.
Out of curiosity, how's Cookie doing these days? Hanging in there?
Yeah, like me, she's moving a little slower and barking a lot because I think she's losing her hearing. But she still eats and gets around, so I'm happy with that.
I used to make a joke about our animals. They're really food processing plants. Everything you put into them gets turned into the same stuff for a drone.
Absolutely. And it never stops. No, she's a narcoleptic carnivore. That's about it.
Are you saying that when she eats, it makes her fall asleep?
Yeah. And as soon as the action stops, she goes to sleep. And if the plate comes out and she hears a knife and fork or something, or hears the stove go on, oh, she's wide awake then. And as soon as that ends, goes right to sleep.
Does she sleep quite a few hours during the day?
I believe dogs go between 14 and 16 hours a day of sleep. As they get older, that increases a little bit. But she's still alert, and she likes to be outside, even in the cold weather. So she should be doing okay.
How many pounds is Cookie?
Now she's about 75 pounds. She was 93 pounds at one time.
That's a big dog by my standards. That's almost the size and weight of a Malamute, if you know what that means. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, these Swiss Mountain dogs are large dogs. They look something like a Rottweiler, only not quite that big, but they have that same look to them.
Now, you're going to have to ship me a picture of her someday, John. for now.
Good night, Dick. Great job. Talk to you soon. KC2WGB clear.
Thank you very much, Dick, for a beautiful unique interaction.
Yeah, that's a nice antenna. But because they are skimping on the information in that article, some people would have trouble duplicating that antenna away.
I understand that. Thank you very much. I appreciate for a very accurate explanation. I am just this way. I dragged the subject to the very end till I have no more questions. But thank you for your patience. I do appreciate it.
Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
And 2PPN and 2ZEP. N2PPN and 2ZEP. N2PPN and 2ZEP.
2ZEP and 2PPN.
Good morning and happy Chinooka.
Yes. Happy Chinooka to you, too.
And thank you for the long-distance diagnosis. Worked out.
Well, yeah, if it didn't immediately blow out the lights, then probably what they did was they nicked the wire, and then with the rain that we had, probably caused a short.
Yes, since the last time I used that outlet, I can't remember when. I'm just gonna pull the outlet out of the ground, cut the wire, and leave it buried.
Okay, then. That works.
Yeah, because to pull that wire up from the ground and try to repair it, a major job because it's underneath the brand new patio. I'm certain of it.
Oh, well. That's what they make extension cords for now.
I still have a power outlets on the back wall of the house anyway, so that was just an extra one. I don't know why they haven't put it out there.
You still have the pipe or whatever coming out from the wall of the house that went down into the ground, right? So you could just always, if you needed an outlet out there, just put the outlet on the wall where it comes out of the house.
One problem. Pipe has been covered by the siding most of the way.
Oh. If you really needed an outlet out there, it could be done. It could be done, and you could salvage what you have. It just would be the outlet would be on the house instead of in the dirt.
But as I said, approximately the same wall of the house, I have other outlets, so I can do without this one.
Guess you'll just have to plug in your Hanukkah lights someplace else.
Yep, if that's what you like to plug in back there. I very rarely use the outlets in the back.
You never know when you're having a backyard barbecue and you got a bunch of menopausal women and you need to hook up fans.
Well, as I said, I still have outlets back there.
It's good to have an outlet. You don't want to keep it inside. And it's a PPN mobile.
Yep, yep. Got one outlet, which is a switch receptacle on the floodlight for the back. The other one, duplex, is a regular duplex outlet, so I got plenty of power on the back wall.
Always good to have the power.
I was just hoping it wasn't the circuit breaker because that would have been messy. I have spares from things that I have disconnected and no longer using, but the power rating on those are way too high to use for anything. Like my old double wall oven and range top, which were electrical, don't exist anymore. I now have gas in the kitchen.
Circuit breakers only go bad when they trip a lot, or you use them like a light switch. Circuit breakers don't go bad from just sitting there quietly doing their job. When they get tripped many, many times, or they get used as a light switch to turn things on and off, that's when they fail. So put that out of your mind that a circuit breaker just for no reason at all decided to fail. one fail that you had to help me replace, remember?
But that failed in the on position, didn't it?
Don't think so. I think it failed into the off position.
I don't remember. It's a long time ago. Many, many brain cells ago.
Yeah, that was the old Pushmatic, that it was fun finding a replacement. And when I saw how that thing went in and out, I said, I better call someone who knows what he's doing. One that you had to remove or install, you had to put a screw into the live bus bar.
Called bolt-on breakers. Yeah, but you called me anyway. You looked for somebody who knew what they were doing, but you called me anyway.
Oh, well. You did it. You didn't lose any more hair.
Oh, didn't lose any more hair. Didn't put any more burn marks in my screwdrivers or walk away with an arc flash. So I guess all was a good thing that day.
Yes, yes, yes. So, if I remember correctly, little she who must be your babe is back at school. Has Soldier Boy left town yet?
Tomorrow. He departs on his journey tomorrow, so I'll be taking tomorrow off from work. Gonna go have a nice spend the day together and then usher him off onto his flight to go visit Kim Jong-il.
Okay. Have to report to a base and is going on military transport or taking commercial flights that the government pays for?
Commercial flights that your tax dollars pay for. And he's going to be reporting a Camp Walker. Camp Walker in Daegu.
Alrighty then. Now, when he flies that kind of situation, is he required to be in uniform?
No. No. He will be plain clothes.
That could be more comfortable.
Oh, yes. It could be, considering that the flight from, I think, Seattle to Korea is like 15 hours.
Hopefully planes like that don't pack them in coach like everyone's used to. Throw the military, they give them a first-class ticket.
If they could have given him steerage, they would have given him steerage. They don't give you much of anything, boy, I'll tell you. The only thing he might be able to finagle is, if the plane's not full, he might be able to get him to bump his seat up a little bit. Maybe business class.
Would be nice. I remember my flight to Israel, which, less hours than what he's going to accumulate totally. That plane was packed. We were like a sardine.
Well, yeah, that's the way you want to travel to Israel, like a sardine.
Yeah, it was a number of years ago. It was one of those old 747s where they had the movie projected on the wall. You wanted to sleep in your projection screen. You had lights in your eyes all night.
That's why they make things like those blindfold sleep shades and drugs and alcohol and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I was traveling with the kiddies, so I couldn't drug myself.
Drug the kiddies.
That would have been nice.
Hey, let me put a little bit of Johnny Walker in your warm milk that you're going to have just before you go to sleep.
Actually, it wasn't my kiddies. It was the kiddie in front of me.
Oh, just think if you would have brought a little laughing gas with you.
Yeah, it could have made it a little more pleasant.
Yes, well now everything has to go in a 1-gallon Ziploc bag.
into a 1 gallon Ziploc bag, I don't think they would allow me to bring the compressed gas cylinder on the plane.
Oh, just fill up the 1 gallon Ziploc bag with 100% nitrous and just use it like a pillow. Say, that's my pillow.
And suck on it every once in a while.
That's right. Just